the three things that need to be in place. The imprinting, which is just an involuntary response, right? You can't muster it up. And it's either there or it's not. It's one with your homosexuality. And if you don't believe people become ex-gays, then somebody isn't going to become an ex-you, or somebody's going to turn into somebody who's going to find you attractive. So that's the imprinting, the shared values. You're going to have to be on the same page about what's really a big deal in your life and in his life. And the third thing is what?
Mutual level of commitment.
Well, that's one way of putting it. I say it a little differently to get the whole thing. Yeah?
Willingness to work as a team.
Yeah, and that is part of it. Remember, there's another part.
It's ability to commit.
Yeah, well, the ability. The willingness and the ability to work as a team player, you see? A lot of people are well-intentioned, but they have no skills at being a team player. So it takes both the willingness and the ability. Now, if you have no willingness, forget it. If you lack the skills, you might be able to learn them, if you have a willingness to learn, you see? And if you consult the right people, you know, I mean, the people out there who tell you crazy things about that too. But you need to build a skill set and have a willingness to get through tough times and difficult times, which are inevitable, and which can be done if you're a team player. So those three things have to be in place. That's why I say to the question of where to find somebody is go to a shared value venue, much like this. You can't assume that every single person here is exactly where you are in terms of values, but you can be better convinced that you might find somebody here who's on the same page with you in terms of what's really important in his or her life than just walking into some place where they'll just let anybody in. Yeah? Yeah. So what was the other hurdles?
People are shallow and they lie.
Yes, people are shallow and they lie. And that, of course, is true. And the reason people lie is what?
Sometimes it's their people pleaser.
Yes. Well, they want their way. Mm-hmm. And they have a sense of themselves and a sense of how they don't measure up. And so they camouflage what they think doesn't measure up. And they will tell you what they think you want to hear and so forth. Now, that's all because they believe they need it to go a certain way with you. So you can count on people trying to do that, which means that you have to not make any snap judgments about the advisability of beginning to date this person. So I speak in terms of screening. You have to screen the person. You have to spend some time with that person to figure out, is this person lying, or is this person just telling me what he wants, what he thinks I want to hear? Because everybody is doing that, right? If you have an interest in somebody, you try to, you know, give what you think is going to please them. And you put your best foot forward, right? You don't even know if the other person's in defeat, but you do. You try to put your best foot forward. But you don't know what your best foot is from his point of view, right? And here we get into the whole matter that I speak of in terms of versions of ourselves and versions of other people. We all have a self-concept, right? Don't you? You know, when you think of yourself, you have something in mind. And that something that you have in mind is not and cannot be experienced by you as romantically interesting, right? If you go all weak in the knees thinking about yourself, you need help. So we cannot find ourselves sexy, okay? We cannot fall in love with ourselves. Now, heterosexual men don't have a problem with this, because they don't look in the mirror and think that they should see sexiness. See? If they looked in the mirror and saw a woman looking back out of the mirror, they'd fall over in a faint, I suppose. You know? They're not looking for sexiness in the mirror. How many of you have gone to the mirror to see if you're sexy. All of you. Yeah. Okay. Well, you've gone to the wrong place. Because you'll never see a sexy guy looking back at you from the mirror. You might see your grandmother's features a little bit, you know. Or, you know, in other words, there are family characteristics, right? And you know, you're not interested in that. So, forget it about looking in the mirror. But that's good news. Because here all along you've been saying, well, what I see in the mirror, I don't find sexy. But I find him sexy, and that one sexy, and this one sexy. Well, yes. So, what you see in the mirror is irrelevant for what this person is going to decide about you, because this person, he's not looking in your mirror, right? He's not using your eyes, connected with your brain, holding your imprinting. He's using his eyes, his brain. So you literally have no clue about what he sees when he sees you. So a big mistake that people make is they extrapolate from their sense of themselves and think that's who walks in the room when I walk in the room. Okay? Each of you thinks that the you in your head is the you everybody else sees here, right? Well, in the first place, the you in your head isn't in the other people's heads, so they couldn't be thinking of the you in your head. Plus, even the you in their head isn't the number one thing on their mind. Even if they find you attractive. The number one thing in their mind is, how am I coming across, right? Not me, not Blair. But themselves. Because they're tripping over their version of themselves too. See? And they remember, before they came here, they checked it out at the mirror, and they said, well, do I, well, I, you know, I guess as well as I can, you know, I'll go. And they walk in, and then they see, oh, can't compete with that one, can't compete with that one, you see. Well, how do you know? You're speaking over only for yourself. How many yous are in this room? As many as there are people in the room. Right? It's a very crowded workshop. See? The one you that isn't in the room for anybody else is the you in your head. Isn't that a relief? Okay? So when you start to realize that, what's the danger of showing up? See? The danger of showing up, the danger of approaching someone, asking somebody out for coffee, the danger there is perceived to be, you just said it, right?
Rejection.
You just said it. Rejection. The big word, rejection. Well, I'm here to tell you, there is no rejection possible. Why is there no rejection possible?
Rejecting the you that's in their head.
Yeah.
Exactly. They're rejecting the you in their head if they say no. But when they say no, you mistake it as they're saying no to the you in your head, right? Now you might say, well, so what? I still don't get coffee with them. No, that's not your problem. Your problem is, see, I knew it. The sexy ones don't want me. But that's a mistake, right? In other words, you have no idea why that person said no to you. Maybe the person has his eye on somebody else who is already in a relationship, or is straight, or is all kinds of things. Or maybe he said no because, you know, I want to fire you before, I mean, I want to quit before you fire me, you know? Right? Who here has been afraid to approach somebody and let him know that you're attracted to him because you were afraid, well, it won't do any good because he'll just say no, right? Haven't you thought that? Okay, so don't you think it goes the other way too? Yeah. There are a lot of people, they never found out that you were attracted to them, right? They never found out from you, right? Well, don't you think it goes the other way too? There are people that you never found out were attracted to you. Now, some of them, you're just as happy that you never did find out. But some of them, if you would have known, you wouldn't believe it. See? because you simply cannot rummage around in your own brain to come up with the version that somebody else has of you. And that you really have to remember. And this isn't something that hopefully I can keep in mind when I go up. You don't have to hopefully. It makes as much sense as they're not using your brain, are they? Isn't that where your you is located? Is your you located, you know, out here in the wall or out in the trees or someplace? Your you is located in your brain. Nobody else is using your brain, right?
Currently.
And I'm trying to use your brain. And you're not using anybody else's. So why would you rummage around in your brain, looking at your you, looking at your him, to predict his response to his you? Doesn't make any sense, right? So, getting back to what we were saying, the wise thing is to show up at a shared value venue, allow the imprinting to take care of itself, knowing there's no rejection of your you, not being afraid then. The only reason we're ever afraid is we think there's a danger. What's the danger? No danger. Nobody can reject your you, and that's the only way. You know, when you find out some people have rejected you for some things that you, you know, don't give yourself the assignment to be, it doesn't bother you, right? So you don't know why they said no to you. But at any rate, no matter if you're attracted to him and he's not attracted to you, what kind of an enjoyable relationship would that be? Right? That wouldn't be enjoyable. That wouldn't meet your intimacy needs. So, you have to do the screening, though, to find out how they're lying, how they're putting their best foot forward, what you're not hearing. Who here has found that, you know, you can meet only a stranger, right? Only a stranger you can meet. And the stranger will get stranger, right? The stranger will get stranger before becoming more familiar. And that's only the way it is. How could you possibly know everything about this person on just seeing the person? And so some people that you thought, you just needed to, you know, meet, then you found out later, I just need to get away from him now. And that's normal. You can't know ahead of time all this stuff. So, you show up at a shared value venue, you allow the imprinting to just do its own thing, and then you begin to screen, if there's a mutual imprint, you begin to screen each other, find out, who am I dealing with? And certainly one of the main things that you really want to check out is this person really on the same page with me in terms of what's really a big deal? You know, it being a very serious Christian disciple is important to me. I'd better be involved with somebody for whom that is also very important. Otherwise, it's going to be not only tension and trouble, but estrangement, not being able to share. You see, and so then you also have to screen for evidence of the willingness and the ability to be a team player. As some people mentioned about some people just interested in a quick, gentle fix. You know, well, a quick, gentle fix may be quick, but it's no fix for the need that you have. And it's usually disappointing because, of course, what we go after in a quick, gentle fix is a fantasy, which is always unmixed. Fantasy, by definition, is always unmixed in our heads. But what right do we have to decide how it's going to be if only I had sex with him? So, inevitably, it's not exactly what I had cracked it up to be when I actually did it. So, because reality is always a mixed bag, you know. Okay. Smells. Didn't want to do what I wanted to do. I mean, all kinds of, you know, disappointment. So, besides, that quick gentilizing cannot possibly address the deep need for connection that you have, for human sexual connection. Okay, so you know those three legs of the stool that have to be in place. What are they? Mutual attraction, which is to the persona. See, it's never to a body part. It's to the whole sense of the person, right? In other words, all the people that you've been attracted to, they don't even necessarily have to measure up in terms of your idea of aesthetic beauty, right? Some people that you've been interested in, you wouldn't say, you know, you ought to quit your job and try and become a male model, or, you know, whatever. Right? I mean, most of these illustrations I'm using are male because of the fact that most of you are men in here, and that visually visually mediated imprinting is basically a male experience. But So you show up at where?
Like venues.
A
shared
value venue. And you keep your eyes and ears open, listening, trying to figure out how is this person different from the person I thought this person was, right? Because he or she will be. You know? You know, mind reader, you know, quick study. And then it takes a little longer to find out how much of a team player is this person, right? If we can't agree on even where to go for the first coffee, you know, and this person is insisting on Starbucks and this person is insisting on Timothy's, forget it, right? So, what was one of the other things?
I guess the proliferation of no strings attached sex.
No strings attached, yes, yeah. First of all, is there anybody that doubts that quick, no sex, no strings attached sex can actually address your intimacy need? Nobody's that foolish, right? I mean, it just doesn't reach it, doesn't make it. But it does an awful lot that people are not intending. A lot of gay couples stop having sex with each other after a little while, like a week or two, or a month or two, or a year or two. How come? Because they have so frequently reinforced what I call the incest taboo in their brain, with the very powerful behavioral reinforcement of orgasm to link sexiness with anonymity and novelty and no chance for rejection, because the person doesn't even know me, and sorry, get in, get out, and that sort of thing. So that kind of reinforcement, either through pornography or through lots of sex with lots of different people, is a very, very dangerous thing, because what it does is it reinforces the association in your brain with hot, as you define it, meaning anonymous, novelty, no chance for the person getting to really know me and be disappointed, so forth, with the orgasm. Now, if you are going to be interested in a continuing, robust sexual life together, you better not do anything to reinforce that, and everything to go in the other direction. Yeah?
Okay, this is, I'm going to articulate this as best I can, because you brought up the pornography, and I've been thinking about it for a while. We were walking around the password district yesterday, and...
Bad idea. Anyway, go on.
Last week, me and some friends were in a discussion about the degrees of pornography, what's pornography, and it just came back to me just walking around. It's like, I mean, what you talked about, just when you see something and it just, you know, the light comes on. I mean, it can be very tame to very, you know, extreme. And it's kind of like, I don't know exactly what my question is, but it's, at what point do you run away? Is it when the light comes on? I mean, because pornography, I'm so confused. I mean, just walking around. I mean,
well, I mean, you cannot help but just, you know, walking down the street and you see somebody that you're imprinted to the persona of, yes, and you find that person attractive and so forth. Just be very careful that you don't run with the whole scenario about what it would be to actually have that person in your life, because you don't know. And there's no sense in reinforcing that silly notion that just because you think this person looks in a certain way, which is all part of that persona that we're attracted to, you see. We read all kinds of stuff, personality-wise, and education, all kinds of stuff into that person, the persona, in that sense. But one of the things that you don't have to get yourself waylaid and, oh my goodness, if only I would have been able to be here. And, you know, that stuff.
That's it. At what point do we avoid anything that's going to start that imprinting? If it's,
you don't avoid.
In this People magazine.
You don't avoid the imprinting. You can't avoid the imprinting. You just see. But don't run with the idea that, you know, every time I'm imprinted to that split second persona, that I'm supposed to then, you know, trace that down and find out if I could meet him and so forth. Because statistically speaking, most people that you're attracted to are going to be screened out if you do the proper screening. Most of, either you'll screen them out or they'll screen you out. So, you know, that's just the way it is statistically. But now, if you, the definition, I think, the working definition of pornography is if you actually, go out and rent a video or whatever, go on the internet, purposely to simply become, you know, genitally stimulated or something like that. Because then it's, you know, again, like so much in life, what we're going after, what we are trying to do, cannot be gotten that way, and what we are not going after comes with it. And one of the things that comes with it is the reinforcement of incest effort. So that the you know, in other words, we already have this problem of sex being dirty and embarrassing, and you know, you really don't want to think about your father getting an erection and your mother lubricating, and then as a result, you came into the world. You know, you don't want to think about that, you know, see? Because that is just too... Now, there's nothing wrong with thinking about it, except that association in your mind with sex and dirtiness and anonymity and outside the family and so forth, you see? Creates that in your mind. So that's why I call it the incest taboo. If you're serious about a continuing relationship with somebody, then that person's going to be part of your family. And you're going to have sex in the family. Oh my goodness, you see? Can't do that. And if all you've done repeatedly over a long period of time is reinforced by orgasm, the association in your mind, in your brain, with anonymity and no possibility for no and that sort of a thing, then you're not going to be able to sustain a robust sex life in your ongoing relationship.
So how do you do that? How do you move beyond that when you're used to a smorgasbord diet and you want to settle for a single entree?
See, that is the problem. See, you don't have to settle for a single entree as over against the smorgasbord. Because what you're calling the smorgasbord is superficial. It doesn't meet the intimacy need. See? What you're calling the single entree is the main course, you see, is the richness, you see. So it's unfair to say, well, I have to bypass all of this for just this. You see, no. I go after this because all of this cannot possibly meet the need. You see, so rather than think of the avoidance of pornography and anonymous sex and so forth as a deprivation, no. To engage in all of that is the deprivation, because it is making it either more difficult or even impossible. to finally get into a robust sexual relationship in the fullest sense of the term, in an ongoing, family situation.
But if that has become addictive behavior,
yes, no. Get rid of the idea of addictive. Because if you stick with the idea of addictive, well, it's over. Mm-hmm. Concept. Now it can be difficult, but I'm enough of a cognitive psychologist to understand that we feel and behave as a result of what we think and how we define things. And so to understand, yes, I have done a lot of stuff that has pushed me in a not useful direction, but I don't have to continue to do it that way. I do have, if all else fails, the God-given power of will, right? That's a very useful tool. Most of the time we don't even need it, because we do what we want to do anyway. See? But sometimes we have to actually exercise. And the more you exercise an active will, the more you are retraining, yourself. And then, and the more you look back on your behavior in the past, not with, with some insight, you understand, well, of course, what was I thinking? How could I have gotten to where I was trying to get on the basis of the way in which I was dealing with it, you see? So, anyway.
So the more you along those lines, because you haven't had the most chastes of life, So the more that I say, no, that's not really what I want right now, I want something more, I'm retraining myself so that I can actually have that long-term...
Yes. Yes, in other words, what you wanted all along but didn't know exactly how to go about getting, and the general pop culture doesn't help you, it just reinforces that, that's the way to do it. But did you ever notice, in just even the regular movies, the sex scenes are between people that have just met each other, right? You never see sex scenes between people who've been married for 3 years, right? Okay. Just in regular movies, not porno. Porno, the person just crawls in the window to fix your cable. How unreasonable is that, I mean, anybody who's dumb enough to think my intimacy needs, the deepest needs that I have for human interaction, the most intimate need for human interaction, could be settled once and for all by a fling with the cable man. That person is operating on not too many cylinders up here. But it has a very negative effect on a reinforcement that is sex. That's hot sex, you see. And then, of course, on the ongoing basis, well, this is boring. Well, of course it's boring, boring in the sense that there's no novelty here, there's no anonymity here. The only time you could start to experience the relationship with your ongoing partner as anonymous is if you're in the early stages of Alzheimer's, right? Who are you? Well, you don't want that. Yeah.
Well, it looks like what you're saying applies to masturbation as well.
Yes.
The masturbation itself can have a very negative reinforcement. And I'm just thinking that if that is probably the only outlet available to those of us who are, trying to maintain Christian values, then it sounds like we're damned.
No, you're not damned at all. Because if you masturbate to porno, then you are reinforcing that incest taboo and reinforcing a sense of discouragement that you'll ever, and even if you're hearing all this and then you say, well, I'm never going to have somebody away, so I don't need to worry about the incest taboo because there'll never be anybody to, sustain a relationship with, so I might as well just jerk off to the porno. Well, that's reinforcing a lot of pessimism, you see. You can still masturbate, but you don't masturbate to the unreality of fantasy scenes about cable men, or you know, whatever is your idea.
Who has that kind of time?
Take a minute and a half out of your life.
What do you suppose is the solution, the masturbatory solution? And it's not thinking about Mother Teresa. It's simply focusing your attention on your God-given physical feelings. The tension, the physical tension, and release. The feel of the whole thing, right? The breathing, see? Just as a, you know, a massage or just scratching an itch feels good because there's an itch and you scratch it. The same thing. When you want to scratch your itch, you don't think, I have to think of the cable man. Now you may, you know, probably have a bunch of doubters here. Though, well, that, all, you know, certainly, you know, it won't be much fun. But you ought to try it. You know, in other words, you can get to the point, you know, of first of all, not reinforcing all the superficial stuff with the orgasm, but actually reinforcing with the orgasm, feeling good about what you're doing. Because how many people, you masturbate and you're at least of two minds about what you're doing, you see? And then, you know, after it's over, you think, well, no, that wasn't so good, you know. But you can actually have a very strong orgasm by concentrating simply on the physical sensations and reminding yourself these are, you know, God-given to you, you know. There's a reason that, for example, your genitalia are not exactly in the very back of your back, you see? Difficult to reach. I'm making myself clear. You see? Try it. You'll like it. Anyway, what were some of the other things written down?
Expectations.
Nobody has ever been disappointed who didn't have expectations. Expectations are what produce disappointment and carried to a greater extent than even despair. So you have to ask yourself, what are my expectations? Let me identify my expectations, be ruthlessly honest with myself, what am I expecting, and then challenge those expectations and say, now how reasonable is it that just because I find this person sexy, that he or she would be a great catch? Many of you have already discovered somebody was sexy, but very disappointing. Not even only in many ways, but even sexually. I mean, genitally. But certainly as a team player, person turned out to be a very selfish person, right? Very self-centered, or whatever. So, you couldn't have known that immediately. See, one of the things that you can do about screening people, you can screen people, they don't even know that you're screening them. So that's good, because then they won't try and put their best foot forward with you. See? They won't be trying to tell you what you want to hear, or they think you want to hear. So if it's a shared value opinion, you know, like all weekend, you know, you don't have to play your hand immediately. You see somebody early in the weekend, and you observe that person in the cafeteria. Is the person just always talking about himself? That's a bad sign. See? The person gracious or not? Person moody? That's lovely to live with somebody. I don't care how sexy the person looks. It's not fun. See? So you can observe somebody without even showing your hand. And most of the time, you're going to decide, you know, this isn't who I thought it was. Okay? So expectations are very important. To identify, challenge, and change them in keeping with what makes better sense. And certainly a dumb expectation is to expect that somebody who is a stranger is going to continue to be experienced by you as that person that you think he is to begin with. Most won't. And that's fine. See, sometimes people, they have a date with this one and it didn't go so well, or they told me to jump off the cliff. And then they have another one, and it doesn't go, and then they have that. My goodness, I've had 4 dates with 4 different people, and I still don't have a lover. Well, yes. Right. It's a high calling to be your partner. Yeah? Mm-hmm. If you were starting a business and you needed somebody to donate $1 million, how much time would you spend trying to get $1 million out of a guy who didn't have 50 cents, but he was cute? Didn't make sense. Well, what you're after in a successful romantic sexual relationship is somebody who can afford to be a partner in, you know, the rigors that are inevitable in a relationship. And so all the time you spend with somebody that you begin to suspect, this is not who I thought, but still he's cute, and so, you know, all that time is wasted. You've taken yourself down a detour. You think it's going to be a long time before you find the right person? You're contributing to that by continuing down a road with somebody that you already know is not for the long haul. So get off of that and get over here with somebody that has some promise. Now, one of the other problems that people have a lot of times is that they screen people out not because they are not imprinted to the people, because they are imprinted, but the person isn't really, you know, movie star glamorous, which has nothing to do with erotic, romantic imprint. That's an aesthetic judgment, you see. But if I'm stumbling over my sense of myself, part of what a date could do is be a trophy, you know, with me, you know, boost my own capital, you see, right? That's also very stupid, because if you come around with a trophy date where people are socially conditioned to think of as really sexy, you know, in terms of not erotic and romantic, but just really beautiful, now you have to think this thing through. You walk in with him, does that boost your capital? No. Most people, out of sour grapes, will say, must be paying for it, or whatever. You see? So we'll think less of you than they did before, right? And or they'll be jealous. Whoever thought it was wise to make somebody jealous of you? Yeah? No. So holding yourself hostage to needing not only somebody you're imprinted to, but somebody who has a certain look. or has a certain prestigious career, you know, or has a lot of money, well, that could get into the area of shared value. But it has nothing to do with the impact. So the expectations are very important, to be able to identify what am I telling myself about them and how sensible is it to hold to those. What was another one that
kind of revolving door relationships?
Well, one of the reasons why the revolving door relationships is that the screening has been lousy, right? Why shouldn't there be a revolving door? And as a matter of fact, revolving door is not all bad, you know? I mean, if you discover that somebody's not who you thought that person was, you better keep spin and go on, you see? So a revolving door can just show that you've made a lot of good choices in getting out, but also you made a lot of bad choices getting in, you see? So if you've made a bad choice, then get out. But you can avoid revolving door thing by simply not defining it in your head as this needs to go a certain way. No. How does it need to go? It needs to go toward clarity. It doesn't need to go to walking down the aisle, you see, with his father giving him away to you. That's not the way it has to go. Why does it have to go that way? I think it would have to go that way. Why doesn't it have to go that way? Because the fantasy I have in my head about how nice it would be if only we two were together is just that, a total fantasy. I'm playing all the parts, I'm writing all the scripts, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if what relevance is that for predicting experience? Absolutely no relevance, right? It's worse than worthless because I'm holding myself hostage to it and believing that it makes sense. See? So anybody you start dating, or anybody you just even see, you can get rid of the idea, I need it to go a particular way. Except I need some clarity. And if there's not an opportunity for clarity, because the light changed and you had to drive on, no opportunity to follow up and clarify, don't hold yourself hostage to the silly fantasy you have, oh, if only I could have met him, you know? And now I'll never meet him. And now I'll never have the man in my life. All that nonsense. You know. Wake up and smell the coffee. What else did we write down?
Commitment issues.
Commitment issues, exactly. There needs to be an ability and a willingness to commit. Otherwise, forget it, because the going gets rough. Person ejects. Right? And things will get rough. People get sick. People lose their jobs. The last person you need in a serious relationship is a fair weather friend. Right? And this is not just for the big issues of life. This is just day by day. Commitment to do my chores. See? Because there's nothing quite so debilitating as just believing that, you know, especially out of my misuse of my sense of self, thinking, oh yeah, of course, I'm handy to have around here. I do the ironing and I do the washing, and of course I have to do that to sweeten the pie because I don't bring sexiness to the thing. He or she brings the sexiness, so I guess I'll try and sweeten the pie by, you know, being well-intentioned. Won't happen. What else?
Dating addiction.
Well, I'm not sure what people mean by dating addiction. You know, because going out on a number of dates that are reasonable, you know, person is at least same-sex oriented, and you know, and there's some indication of interest on his part. So, but to call it addiction, well, no, I'm working on addressing this need, so I can't just sit around, you know, waiting. I have to be active, proactive. But I don't have to be desperate. It's a much easier life to be single than it is to be in a quote relationship with the wrong person. At least if you're single, you come home from work and you're not expecting somebody to be there at your apartment who is going to pay attention to you and be loving and caring, right? If you're single, you don't expect somebody to be there. If you walk in and seems like somebody's there, you better step back and call 911. So, but if you are in the wrong relationship and you're expecting that kind of love at home, and you get home and the person is doing nothing except complaining and is bitter and won't have sex and is having an affair on the side and, you know, I mean, all kinds of stuff, that's not pleasant. But even in a relationship, you have to be making compromises all the time. If you're single, you come home, you flip on the TV, or, you know, the stereo, or whatever, listen to whatever kind of music you want. Not when you're in a relationship. And here's something we haven't talked about. The only people we're attracted to are people that we find fascinatingly other from sense of self. Isn't that true? That's the only kind of people we're attracted to. Now, fortunately, that sort of a phenomenon will allow us to continue to be sexually attracted to each other. Okay? Somebody you're romantically attracted to, you can spend all day with, and, you know, and then get together the next day, and, you know, all that. Person that just you just have something in common with, and you know, you're friendly, you know, and you go out for breakfast, and then you sit and talk, and then lunchtime comes. Well, let's go to lunch now. Well, okay, it's lunchtime. Well, now what are we going to do this afternoon? And I was thinking that we'd go to a movie tonight. I mean, you know, right? You don't want that with a friend. But you can't get enough of the fascinatingly other person, right? That you, yeah. But you see, in that there is a challenge. Because they don't think the same way you do. If it's their birthday, you think about having flowers and you know, a romantic candlelight, whatever. That's not the way they think. So, for your birthday, all you get is some cheap card. You know? Not even a Hallmark. Didn't even care enough to send the very And if that kind of thing is misinterpreted, you see, or this person is, you know, I mean, just using kind of almost stereotypical, but it illustrates, you know, if I'm kind of a quiet, somber, you know, intellectual, I'm sort of attracted to really, you know, fun people, or vice versa. Well, that can be problematic, right? I want to sit and read a book, and he wants to go out and skateboard or party or something, you know? See? And yet, the persona, I find, you know, exciting. But the actual living might be difficult. So keep in mind that the only people we're going to be attracted to are fascinatingly other, and you have to make then room for the patience and the hard work that it takes to navigate and negotiate and manage two very different people in the same household. We don't even want to watch the same television shows. I want to watch the news, and he wants to watch reruns of
Golden Girls.
Right?
Darn right.
That's why you need the ability and the interest to be a team player and to negotiate and so forth.
What would you say about opposite attracts?
Well, that's a sort of a typical way of putting it. I'm just saying that maybe to understand it a little better than just saying opposites attract, because opposites don't, you know, in other words, that's why I say fascinating otherness. There can be unfascinating otherness, you see. So just by opposites, it can't simply be, here's a real laid-back, nice guy, and here's a real grunge, that's opposites, that's not, fun. It has to be fascinating otherness, a sense of fascinating. And nobody else has to agree that you two are different, In fact, most of the time, people will say, I don't see what he sees in him, right? I don't, and literally they don't. They're not using the brains that you two have to see each other, right? And I once knew a situation where somebody said, I don't know what he sees in him, and the other guy said, I don't know either. And they were talking about the reverse people. But it doesn't matter that they don't see it. You see it. That's why blind dates don't work, you see. Because somebody's idea of what would be just great for you and you, And usually it's judged in terms of the similarities. I have somebody for you, right? Well-intentioned, but... Oh, how long does it take to drink a cup of coffee? some questions, and yeah.
When it comes to this idea of putting your me that's in someone else's head.
Yeah.
Maybe you're speaking specifically about attraction there, but it seems to me like sometimes you get some potentially valuable feedback from that. From how other people see you, what that might say about who you are as a person and things that maybe you need to work on. And so I'm wondering if you can speak to that a little bit.
Well, yes, I mean, I'm not saying be averse to anybody's giving you well-meaning feedback about, when you handle a situation as you just did there, it's a little, brusque, people can hurt the feelings, that sort of a thing. But I'm just saying that the sense of a person, you see, or a sense of a situation, or a sense of a conference like this. There are people, they would find this whole conference totally boring, right? It's the same conference, but they come with different expectations and different sense of self, Was the election in November the story of Kerry and Bush? Or was it the story of the voters, right? Was this, here's Kerry, or here's Bush, same ink blot, right? Same Rorschach test, but violently juxtaposed ideas about these two men. Well, is that accountable for what's here in these two men, or what's in the brains of these people? See? And you can do this with even the most extreme individual. Hitler. Is there unanimous decision on Hitler? Absolutely not. There are neo-Nazis that think, he's the best thing that ever came along, right? Mother Teresa. Unanimity of opinion about Mother Teresa? Absolutely not. Some people think She was horrible because she didn't address systemic problems, you know, just the baby at a time. Okay? So if you can take such extreme individuals, such as Hitler and Mother Teresa, and have a variety of opinion, don't you think that maybe there might be a variety of opinion about you? You know? Aren't you more of an ink blot, perhaps, and a little more ambiguous than either of those, you see? So just, you know, you just show up, you allow whatever that person's telling himself or herself to dictate how they respond to you, but never trip over your own sense of self. There are many ways in which we think we don't measure up. Besides, we cannot see ourselves as sexy. We think we're not as bright as we should be. We don't know as much as we should know. You know, we... Right? Those sorts of things. There is something that everybody here has mastered. I take it. I mean, maybe you haven't, and you haven't, and you haven't, but you have, and you have.
For what is
it? Ability to tie shoes.
Oh.
See? You have closed the gap between the shoe tire you one time hoped you would become and the shoe tire you actually are. Except, I mean, I don't know about these guys, you know, they're cheating, you know. Cowboy boots and So, and how much pleasure do you get today from having closed that gap between the ideal shoe tire and the perfect shoe tire? Any flow experience? None. So be thankful for those areas of your life where you have not closed the gap, because it's only in that gap that there's a possibility for the experience of flow, of enjoyment, of challenge, and so forth, you see? But don't extrapolate from the sense in which you don't think you measure up, and extrapolate from that and think, other people see me that way, because they don't. See? Isn't that liberating? All the ways in which you think you don't measure up, see? All the ways in which you don't like yourself, nobody thinks of you that way, because nobody's using your brain. Isn't this liberating? See? And yet you've been dragging around that idea, oh, you know, I walk in, I know what they see, it, I know what they think, I open my mouth, I can't stand hearing myself anymore. Well, you can't extrapolate that from that anymore, and that's freeing, isn't it? Yeah? Yeah.
I wanted to kind of go back to number one, where you said, where do we go? Go to a shared value family. What about those of us that live in very conservative, small towns? And I, for instance, have children I cannot move because I don't want them to be abandoned.
Yeah, you have children that what?
That I don't want to move. I don't want them to feel abandoned. I have a 5-year-old son and a 14-year-old daughter.
Uh-huh.
But it's very difficult where I live to find any.
Well, I do think that you have to recognize that there are some difficulties, you know. Now, interestingly, there are many small towns across America where the high school graduating class was maybe 12 people, maybe 6 men and 6 women. Strange. They married each other, and it worked out. Why? Because in most cases, they did share values, right? And they were not deciding on each other in terms of some Hollywood look. And part of the sharing of the values was a commitment to work as a team player, you know, that sort of a thing. So, if we don't hold ourselves hostage to impossible ideals and that sort of a thing, It can be easier than we think, you see. Now, obviously, small town America for heterosexuals isn't the same thing as small town America for gay. But we have the internet, you know, and even if you don't have somebody there present in your life, you can, as Justin was talking about, reach out and be at least in touch with other people so you don't feel so isolated and alone and so forth. You know, I mean, one of the guys that came to the Eastern Connection through learning about it from Justin's website came from a town in Pennsylvania that I had never heard. And I, you know, got my doctorate at Penn State and worked at the University of Pennsylvania, I'd never heard of this town. It was called Pennsylvania. Pillow, Pennsylvania. It had like about three families there. And this young gay guy, you know. So he came to the Eastern Connection. So I couldn't resist asking, is that where Pillow Presbyterian is? I'm sure, you know, for the umpteenth time he's been asked that. But, you know, so there, you know, people are isolated, you know. And you mustn't beat yourself up for having some difficulty with that, but you mustn't exaggerate the difficulty either by holding yourself hostage to, oh, if only I lived in San Francisco, things would be heaven on earth. Please, you know, it's not. There are challenges and problems with living in San Francisco for gay people, just as there are in Pillow, Pennsylvania.
I wanted to go back to when we were naming things. I mentioned baggage, and we kind of joked about it. You said to run. But it's really interesting, and I don't even pay attention to people that say, oh, well, I don't want anybody with baggage, because I don't believe them. But how can somebody really honestly think that they have no problem with their sense of self, to the extent that they don't want anybody with problems because I don't have
them? Well, they're just trying to fool you, or in denial, or something. But, you know, but even if they are, then that's the proof that they have problems with them. You know, what I was saying about the gap, you know, where it's impossible to experience a challenge and flow if we absolutely close that gap, you know, as in shoe tying, we were saying, you see. So everybody, you know, and there's no payoff to have closed the gap, and there's a misinterpretation where the gap hasn't been closed. And there's an extrapolation from that sense of the gap having not been closed for me, you see. And so people do carry around that. The important thing is not to get rid of the sense of gap, but not to misuse it, not to misinterpret it. And, you know, misinterpret it as a predictor of response to me. Because the other people aren't tripping over my sense of self. They have the hands full tripping over their sense of them. Yeah?
Can you parallel for us your understanding of intimacy with God as it relates to intimacy with our, building intimacy with our friends?
Well, you see, everything I'm telling you, you happen to be Christians, but many of my patients over the years have not been atheists, Jews, so I really don't get into that aspect, but since you bring it up, I would just say that, you know, intimacy is closeness with another person. In the case of God, you know, God reaches out to us and we respond to God and have the kind of relationship that God has enabled us to have with Him. And, you know, God was the first one to recognize it's not good for a person to be by himself. And the person, the poetry of Genesis is talking about is a person who did have a relationship with God, right? So obviously, even God doesn't believe that all a person needs is a relationship with Him, and that there's a place for both relationships here. So, you know, on an interpersonal human, relationship, there can be non-romantic, non-sexual friendships and so forth, and intimacy within families, you know, intimacy of a child and a parent and siblings, you know, those sorts of things. And then there is the intimacy that is mediated bodily and physically, but more than that, you know. I mean, just being in the same room with somebody that you are imprinted to is a sexual experience. It may not be a genital experience at the moment, mm-hmm. but it is a sexual experience. It's a romantic experience. Mm-hmm. And that intimacy is all part of it. Isn't it? That's why, you know, it's such silliness when people talk about, you know, tops and bottoms and sexual incompatibility. There is no such thing. Not where there is a love and a willingness to be a team player, you see. Nobody ever, you know, got out of a relationship for sexual incompatibility any more than they did from gastronomical incompatibility. They just couldn't decide on, you know, how to share a meal, you know, if they were saying that it was gastronomical. And they didn't know how to, you know, share the bed. If it was sexually compatible, you know, it's a nice way of, you know, just covering over all kinds of things. Somebody, yeah.
Just wanted to elaborating a little bit more on the term team player. That one I had with the loose group.
Well, a team player is just somebody who, you know, always asks, and this is something you never hear. What's in this for us? You hear plenty of complaints. I'm not getting my needs met, right? What's in this for me? You hear that all the time. Stay away from such a person. And if you're the one saying it, get up to speed. See? So a team player is somebody who has learned in his relationships with friends or with his family or with his romantic partner to always think in terms of what is in this for us. So that if the person in the relationship always asks what's in this for us, he wouldn't say, well, I'm not getting my needs met, I'll go out here, you know, to the roadside and get my needs met. Right? How stupid. My needs aren't going to be able to be met at the restroom on the turnpike. See? But while I'm getting my needs met, I'm neglecting my responsibility at home. I'm facilitating my partner's hurting his feelings. I can be bringing disease into the home. I'm certainly reinforcing incest taboo, making it even more difficult for us to work on our difficulty in our sex life. Right? That's what a team player is, right? What's in this for us? Same way, just even in a Christian group. Not what's in it for me, what's in it for us. Yeah?
I think I was in answering a question somebody asked a dedication and commitment or something like that, and you somehow wound up
not talking about the right thing.
what is it? All the rituals because I'm not sexing. I don't know how you got from point A to B, or what that had to do with the original question, but.
So the original question was what?
Well, something to do with commitment. But you ended with the concrete example of someone, I don't know, being content with doing the chores.
Oh, well, that's part of the commitment. In other words, the commitment isn't just to some global idea of monogamy, though it's important, you know, I mean, it's essential to be committed to a monogamous relationship, but everyday commitment of doing your fair share around the house, That's part of the expression of the commitment.
The day-to-day?
Yeah.
Oh, as well as the, what, universal long-term?
Yes, yes, exactly.
Somehow it felt like you were down on that. I don't know why I came across that way.
Oh, no, no. I mean,
because
life is made up of the little things day by day.
So the little things you add up, yeah. So I don't know, I somehow got the idea that you were thinking that someone can make up for the fact that they don't feel sexy or they don't feel their partner is sexy by doing chores instead.
Oh, I was saying that that is often an irrational way that the people think. That, you know, since I don't bring sexiness to the scene, I will scrub and cook and so forth, and maybe then he'll keep me. That's irrational. Right?
Well, not really, if you're not having sex. It's not so irrational.
It's not so irrational to try and sweeten the pie?
No, but I mean, it's not irrational. But I'm just saying that if you're not having sex, then you do try to sweeten the pie in other ways.
Oh, yes, but it won't work. It won't work.
Irrational.
Huh? What?
So it is irrational. Yes.
It's irrational to try and sweeten the pie. The reason it's irrational to try to sweeten the pie is the pie's already sweet enough. In other words, the pie, me, you see? I'm trying to get the person to be attracted to me. By earning it, see, by doing all the chores, for example, or being understanding, you know, whatever. No, I'm trying to earn the person's attraction to me. Well, the person's attraction to me, that person doesn't have to lift a finger to experience. And I can count on that. I cannot turn, you know, a person named David cannot turn a John sexual into a David sexual by doing the laundry. See? And because the person who's attracted to you brings your sexiness to you, to the situation in his brain. Yep. So there's no need to sweeten the pie. But since we don't understand that, we're too naive, we just assume, well, the me that I think about is the me anybody's going to have to cope with.
Right. But getting back to commitment and the team player thing, you know, we still have to do the chores.
Oh, yes. That's part of the commitment.
Yeah.
But not in order to keep him, but in order because, but only because that's my duty. My bound and duty, and the old Anglican terminology, right?
In other words, just don't think you're sexy or you might be going out.
Right. Yeah. Well, you wouldn't think somebody you didn't think was sexy all of a sudden became sexy because he was mocked before. And by the way, since I brought up the thing about the monogamy, I think a couple of years ago there was somebody who did a workshop here. I heard about that was saying, well, we don't want to be judgmental about, you know, monogamy and all that. That's horse feathers.
Thank you.
And the reason it is, of course, is that we live in a society that expects parity between the partners. Even in ancient Israel, you know, where they didn't. Look at all the hell that broke out over the years between Sarah and Hagar and their descendants, you see? So even where the expectations were for the man to be in the driver's seat and the women to just be, you know, concubines and all, you see? Or even in fundamentalist Mormon society today, there's still a pecking order in the wives and stuff. And certainly in a Western society such as we live in, where there is an expectation of parity, you cannot share that kind of relationship with another person. you know, and have a threesome or, you know, anything like that. And, you know, back, there was a time when people were making more of a rationalization about this, and, you know, well, we have an open relationship, you know. But I always noticed their arrangement for their open relationship is, you know, on our night in which we have our open relationship, you stay below 14th Street at the bars and baths, and I stay above 14th Street, so we won't run into each other, you know. And we can't come back and, of course, talk about it. Or you bring a third person into the situation to, quote, spice up your sex life, which, can you believe, some so-called sex therapists recommend. You know, just because somebody's a sex therapist or a psychologist, they don't think they're very bright. And so, you know, obviously, you're going to have the three people in bed. The two people who think the other one has seen me enough to be totally bored with me. And then the novelty person. Well, who do you think is going to get the attention? This is supposed to solve their marriage situation? It's a recipe for disaster. See? And it reinforces incest taboos to boot. Instead of getting to the bottom and the radical nature of the problem that they have, they are seeking solutions that only make the problem worse. Does that make sense? No judgmentalism there, right? Yeah.
I just wanted to get back to what you said about imprinting.
Yeah.
You said that forms at an early age.
Yes.
And, okay, what happens when the people you're imprinted with, being attracted to, happen to be, I guess that is bad boys.
Bad boys?
Yeah.
Look. I actually had some clients tell me, I would have gone home with Jeffrey Dahmer. Can you believe it? They knew Jeffrey Dahmer only because they knew he killed and ate people. Still, they were imprinted to the Gestalt, you see? Well, you better learn that that ain't enough.
I guess my question is, can you change part of your imprinting?
No, I mean, well, sometimes, I mean, for some people, they might think that the picture of Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, he's cute, but then they find out that he killed and ate people, and that would sort of deflate the imprint.
Well, evidently,
not for everyone. Well, I'm just saying that you cannot make your decision about somebody only on whether or not you think the person is cute, you know. I guess Eva Braun thought Hitler was cute. And, you know, I don't mean just the most scoundrel, you know. I mean, just, haven't you lost interest in somebody once you found out that he was so selfish or, you know, so self-centered or mean-spirited, or racist, or, you know, I mean, right? That's part of, you know, oh, he's attractive, and then, you know, a bunch of stuff comes out of his mouth, and, yeah, you know, just flies the coop. And the same way in the other direction. Somebody you didn't notice, and then the more you see of him, it grows. Yeah. It's not because the person, it's because the various ways in which we're imprinted, we don't see that gestalt, that pattern, right away with a lot of people. With some people, we see it immediately. The thing is, if we don't see it immediately, often we just then walk away. But in an organization like this, you might see somebody here last year and here again this year, and he looks better this year than he did last year somehow, you know, because have you gotten to know him a little better and so forth. Or somebody that you thought was just the greatest thing last year, by the end of the conference you couldn't stand him, right? Now he still looks the same this year, but right? Any of this make any sense?
Yeah.
Think you're better forewarned and forearmed now to go out there and meet your intimacy needs? Isn't it a relief that nobody is going to be tripping over your idea of you? Just concentrate. Think of all the ways in which you don't measure up. And the more ways you can come up with that you don't measure up, you're home free. Because it's in your head, right? Isn't that freeing? Now, is there somebody at this conference that you have thought, because of your imprinting, would be perhaps a candidate for you? Anybody? You don't have to raise your hand. But if there is, now that you know that that person, first of all, doesn't see self as sexy, can't, because why? So you have to think it through. You can't just say, oh well, he said that that guy couldn't see it, so I guess I'm going to have to try and preach, you know, try to believe it, and, you know. No. Why is it absolutely certain that he doesn't see himself as sexy?
Too familiar?
Yes. There is not sufficient fascinating otherness in his brain about his sense of self. And, you know, you can believe he doesn't look forward to, oh, tonight I get to go to bed with me. By the way, if it's anybody like that, he's really troubled. So nobody here that you find attractive experientially sees himself as a dark. Now, maybe he has experienced that a lot of people seem to be interested in him, you see. Maybe more often than not, simply because of a certain culturally conditioned aesthetic look. But since he can't find himself sexy, that doesn't do him any good. And, you know, sometimes I try and point this out to people, and then they say, well, you know, I wish I had his problem. You know, it's like people say, you know, it's not all easy to be a multimillionaire, you know. Well, I wish I had his problem, you know. Well, all you do is just, you know, increase your expenses, and so you increase your debt, and, you know, and so forth. So with the people that have a lot of people running after them because they have a certain aesthetic look, just think of yourself. Think of one case where somebody kept bugging you to go on a date, or, you know, kept hanging around you, and you weren't attracted to them. Did that help you out?
No.
Didn't help you out. As a matter of fact, you just thought, oh, all the trolls are running after me. So remind yourself, it does not help, even if a bunch of people you're not attracted to are all lined up behind you. You know, oh, here they come. So know that the guy that you happen to be attracted to, or the woman that you happen to be attracted to, does not have a self-concept that matches your idea of that person. Quite the contrary. And that person does not stumble over your version of you. See? Now, heretofore, you've thought, if I walk over and talk to this person's going to have to stumble over what I think of me, and has the advantage of my idea of him. He doesn't have the advantage of your version of him, and he doesn't have to stumble over your version of you. Doesn't that allow you then this evening to just go over and plunk yourself down at a table where he's sitting? Now, if he pretends not to see you, that doesn't mean he's not interested. It just means he's scared that if he opens his mouth, he'll say something stupid, and then you'll really not like him. It may also mean that he thinks you're ugly, but if he thinks you're ugly, how good would it be to be around him? Wouldn't meet your need. So you need to get clarity about who thinks you're ugly. Okay? And most people are polite enough that they're not going to walk up to you and say, boy, are you ugly. But they might say, no, thank you, I don't want to date you. Okay?
And it's not your fault either. That's
no.
The big thing.
You're not responsible for somebody's imprinting, you know. But every time you get a no, that is a successful screening. Don't waste your time anymore with the person that tells you no. Because even if he tells you no, out of worry about, well, eventually you'll get tired of him. You can't work out a deal with somebody else. So who here thinks that it's going to be easier for you to maybe, in part, use the rest of the conference to check out some people? You think so?
who thinks,
let me ask you more academically, who thinks that other people in the room should have it easier? Do you? Oh, you're tripping over your version of yourself.
My view is usually just whoever has a pulse.
Whoever has no
question.
See, it's a joke, but it's a very self-sabotaging joke. Just imagine. Some people's version of you is the functional equivalent of your version of what you call the sexy people. Now, you can't experientially understand what they see in you, but that's understandable because you're not using their imprinting and their brain and their formative years and all that. Yeah.
This is the idea I agree with all of what you're saying, really, but I can't help wondering where torture fits into this.
Oh, courtship.
It doesn't sound...
Courtship is another word. Courtship is another word for screening. You see, I'm just using the word screening to explicate what it means. You know, you have to understand that the copy date that is done in the name of screening doesn't have to be exactly experienced so clinically. You see?
But take two or three invitations out for that copy before you decide, okay, this screening has gone this way and that's fine. I'm looking for a more painful wooing.
For wooing?
Why people might say no right away, but later on it might...
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't have to take the initial, you know, the first, you know, but be very, very careful, because wooing can be another name for nagging. Or another word for, he doesn't know what, you know, the meaning of no. No is a two-letter word that means no, right? What part of no don't you understand? But, and it also is easier to get out of that kind of nagging if you can understand that you don't need this particular individual, you see, in your life. You think you do because you are sensing this particular individual as the fantasy that's in your mind. But that isn't believable. See, you're supplying all the data. In reality, he's going to be supplying data, you know, in the interaction and so forth. So don't buy into the fantasy scenario about how it would be if only. And you've already seen in your own history that, you know, whether it's a date or a job or something like that, you know, something that you were so happy to get the interview on and the job or get hired, and then after you got on the inside there, you found out, you know, it's a different thing, right? And same way with people. Except for the one that got away, you see? The job that, well, they didn't call you back. Ah, it would have been a perfect job. Nonsense. If they didn't see the week later hire you, how could it have been a perfect job? And, well, the guy that, you know, I never even did invite out on a date, you know, or said no, but if only he did, then it would have been wonderful. Yeah. Any other questions? Before I send you loose on the campus, listen, just think. You know this. They don't. See? You know this. So operate in terms of it. You see? Because those dumb people out there at the lunch, at dinner time, they're sitting around there worrying about how they're coming across, right? You're not going to be doing that, right? See, you know what they don't. All you have to do is show up. Let their imprinting do its work. Now, just to walk up and say, I'm here. Okay, we'll see you.